This is Danielle Fishel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
When you have 5 and 7-year-old boys, I can promise you they love superheroes.
Oh, it never goes away. Indy is 11 years old and he's obsessed with comics, cartoons, video games, all of it.
Adler and Keaton both have Spider-Man costumes, and if anything says Marvel on it, they are in.
Same. Which is why we love Lingo Kids. They have Marvel Spider-Man activities that are totally age-appropriate.
And safe. Made just for the little ones.
Plus, Disney's Moana, Frozen, Zootopia, all the characters your kids already love, and a few you're secretly hoping they'll get into.
I just load up the iPads with Lingo Kids before a trip, and with over 4,000 interactive activities, songs, and shows, it keeps their attention for hours.
Download Lingo Kids for free or go all in with Lingo Kids Plus for even more incredible content.
Choose the yearly plan and save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play.
Lingo Kids, everything kids love.
Let's talk.
John Brown.
The Devil's Castle, nasty eugenics, euthanasia, and how psychiatry's troubled history reverberates today in The Devil's Castle. Suzanne Paola Antonetta weaves a haunting narrative that confronts the darkest chapters of psychiatric history while offering a bold vision for the future of mental health care. It is a challenging read. It looks into some of the darkest periods of 20th century history. And I'm delighted to say that Suzanne Paola joins us on the line now. Suzanne, good afternoon from us. Good morning to you.
Thank you so much, and I'm so delighted to be here. Thank you for having me.
Whereabouts are you, by the way?
I live in Asheville, North Carolina, so I actually was in the path of Hurricane Helene, and we are still cleaning up, believe it or not. Yes.
Good to know that you're still standing anyway. This we kind of know the twisted and horrendous legacy of the Nazis and the Reich and their warped thinking. But this goes into, just when you thought it couldn't get any worse, it kind of does. And T4 is perhaps the most horrendous of all the horrendous crimes they committed.
Yes, absolutely. And when I started looking into T4, which was an operation in which the Germans actually invented the gas chamber, they developed the first one used on humans to kill their neuropsychiatric population. And that was an action that started several years before the Holocaust. It started in 1939 and killed 80 to 100,000 German citizens, several hundred thousand throughout the territories.
Because this is
occupied lands.
This is the thing. This is their idea of the perfect Aryan, the perfect man, the perfect woman. This warped sort of Nordic vision they had, and anybody who is different doesn't sort of fit into this. Is this would be a fair sort of layman's way of looking at it?
It absolutely is a fair way to look at it. And Hitler particularly had an issue with schizophrenia. He wanted to wipe out schizophrenia. So the sterilization program that began in 1933 sterilized around 300,000. One of the subjects that I follow in the book, an awesome woman named Dorothea Buck, was sterilized at 19. One of her so-called psychotic visions for which she was treated and ultimately sterilized was that Hitler's war would be monstrous. She had a vision. She saw what Hitler was going to do in 1936, and it was treated as a symptom. And ironically, having wiped out most of their schizophrenic population, either through death or sterilization, Germany has not seen any reduction, and didn't after the war, in the number of schizophrenics in the country. So the genetic theories didn't even hold up.
One of the problems that I have with Germany, this is scientists and the medical profession in Germany in the Weimar those years, they're rock stars. They are, people know who scientists are. I mean, you know, they're celebrated in the same way that you would celebrate actors today. I mean, so this is, you're not looking at this from a background perhaps of a population who aren't educated, who don't know. You can't say, I mean, not that that would be an excuse anyway, but you see where I'm coming from with this. It's not as if they are sort of low ranking in the science tables. This is an quote unquote intelligent population. What on earth is going on here, Suzanne?
Yes, it's a fantastic question. They had the most Nobel laureates in the country leading up to the war. They actually had the strictest medical ethics laws in Europe and probably the world, they had strong medical ethics laws, particularly about experimenting on children, which of course they did to a horrendous degree. What happened? It's almost as if some of their knowledge worked against them, because when they went after first the psychiatric population and later the Jewish population, they were using this language of bacteria, of the bacillus, of the virus in the population. This was all fairly sophisticated science used metaphorically against these vulnerable, innocent populations. So some of what we see isn't just that they were transcending the scientific information they had, they were almost using it. And one of the things in the book I talk about is how we can make things better now and how we can avoid those traps of, you know, continuing to get into these genetic and deterministic ways of thinking.
Because, well, I suppose the thing is, a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing. And they're using a flashy vocabulary. That's probably the wrong word to use. But they're using a vocabulary that people say they're talking about. Eugenics, at that point, this is the brave new world. They're trying to build men and supermen, but in a good way. And it's not just because of through Germany. I mean, through Europe, pretty much. So this is you're going to have more leisure time. So we might as well go for building, you know, in God's image, if you were, you know, perfection the way through. So there must be a misguided, I'm not talking about Germany in particular, but a misguided way to try to sort of. This anything that is slightly away from quote unquote the norm is seen to something that can be treated or can be prevented. Is that a fair statement?
That's a very fair statement. We have medicalized and pathologized a lot of things that are simply differences. And one of the things I talk about in the book, and a British neuroscientist named Anil Seth was really important to my thinking on this, is that we are meant to be mentally wildly diverse. Humans are. Our consciousness is not just a wondrous thing, but it's very unique to the individual. And one of the things Anil said to me that was very meaningful was neurodiversity is going to be as transformative as our understanding of identity, racial, other diversities, once we start becoming comfortable with it and get out of this way of thinking, in the U.S. now we have this, we have autism, we have to, how can we genetically address this? How can we change it? How can we fix it? Instead of what is this population bringing to us that we need?
Yeah, because I mean, and autism is in particular not a one size fits all situation. There are so many varieties and boundaries with that, so we talk about that, but we only understand a tiny percentage of the human brain. You know, we can talk about landing on Mars, but actually our own inner space, we are woefully trying to work out what actually happens within, you know, within our skulls. And so studying diversity is something that we should be looking at, and not taking it, not seeing it as a disadvantage or something to be sort of, autistic or neurodiverse or whatever. And I'm going to drop the W word in here now, Suzanne, so forgive me, because people say, science gone woke, etc., which is the narrative that we're kind of hearing now.
Yes, and it's a very sad narrative, because one of the things I get into in the book is that Dorothea Buck, this amazing woman who she lived to be 102. She died in 2019. She was outside the German Bundestag protesting the fact that Germany hasn't recognized the psychiatric victims pretty much until her death. But yes, just as autism is a number of things, I think psychosis is a number of things. And a lot of the people I talk about in here had these visions that were extremely accurate. Now, this information may have come to them through a channel of suddenly seeing or hearing something that for most people wouldn't be a normal channel, but yet they were correct. Her vision of Hitler's war was more accurate than probably anybody else's in Germany in 1936, Dorothea Buck's. So what are we trying to correct, and why are we trying to correct it? What is it actually bringing to our culture? Because it's very clear, even if you, and I have done this interview evolutionary scientists, it is very clear that traits and states stay in the population because they serve a purpose. And right now we're kind of, and this is less true in Europe, but it's still somewhat true there, more about flattening it, more about normalizing everyone than about understanding that consciousness, and neuroscience gets this, they call it the great wonder, that consciousness is a really, is a great gift. It's a miracle. It's an incredible thing that we do every day.
The problem,
in being able to think.
The problem is with Germany, though, as it gets into the late 30s, is all the, you know, all the good scientists are either imprisoned on the point of death, dying, or they fled. So you've only got the ones who are towing the party line. Now, and again, that leaves open to the horrendous abuse that we see, you know, especially in, I mean, the book is called The Devil's Castle, so I don't want to make it entirely about the, you know, the awful deeds that happened with T4 and eugenics programmers and sterilizations and basically murder. But I mean, that's the starting point, surely.
Yes, absolutely. And it's true that towing the party line got you benefits in that period in Germany in the late 30s. One of the sad things I discovered, though, is that the doctors who refused simply refused. And actually, when they had these meetings about the Action T4 and initiating the euthanasia programs, Brandt would ask if anyone didn't want to be included. It was okay. No one was punished for saying no. So it was very much taking the biases of the period that we're just, this is genetic, it's bad, it's hereditary, let's just get rid of this, get it out of the population. I'm not sure that thinking is gone. And I think certainly in the United States, we put so little money into caring for people with mental distress. This is true in many places in Europe as well, that we are not putting in resources, we're not addressing this population as we should, because we still don't think of it as a valuable population.
And again, it's easier to tag people you don't understand with the thing of, well, why are we quote unquote wasting our money on understanding these people when we need to have more healthcare, we need to have, I mean, and I'm talking through from a European point of view, but obviously in the States, the healthcare situation, that's an entire different interview on itself.
But it does, yes.
But it is easy to label people as wacko or strange, or, you know, something happens, there's an incident somewhere, and if that person, if it's not a terrorist thing, then the next question is, you know, are they mentally unstable? If they are mentally unstable or a little bit different, then the response is, okay, well, we'll just, you know, because otherwise they call it a death penalty, but otherwise it's just lock them up, and that's where the problems start.
Absolutely, that is where the problems start. And the things that get people into that position where it seems like there's no alternative but to lock them up is often just bad care. It's being thrown on these medications that really knock you for a loop, and then being taken off of them without. Most doctors still don't understand medication withdrawal with psychiatric drugs. So we're creating a situation in which people become, it becomes hard for them to function, and then we're punishing them for that lack of function. So a lot of it simply has to do with care. And you can look at certain, you know, there's the antithesis of Germany. You can look at Philippe Pinel in France in the late 1700s, getting these asylums where people have been chained maybe for decades and releasing them cured, releasing them in completely wonderful shape by talking to them, by understanding them, by creating individual ways of dealing with people rather than just, you know, a one-size-fits-all medication regime. And they did have meds then. So one of the things I write about in The Devil's Castle are Philippe Pinel's moral treatment, Soteria. Germany in the early 1800s had the best psychiatric institutions in Europe, and they were routinely taking people considered hopeless and releasing them as cured, releasing them in great shape. So it can be done. We're simply not doing it because I think we're still a lot of that thinking. It's genetic. It's not really fixable. These people have nothing to say. Is still with us. But we still have those Dorothea Bucks who are seeing, you know, the war coming. And it's funny because it used to be kind of a comedian trope in the U.S. to make these cartoons about so-called mad people declaring apocalypse. You know, and we stopped doing that when we realized climate change may actually be sending us toward an apocalypse.
But you see, the thing is, to take somebody who's been chained in an asylum in France and make them leave a situation where they're a functioning member of society, that takes time. It takes investment. It takes, you know, effort. And we live in a society now, as we lived in those days, where a pill, a quick fix, we want immediate reaction. It doesn't matter, you know, any trauma, any mental health, it can be addiction, be it, you know, let's not even go down the opioid crisis that's having at the moment, be it psychiatric. If they can't fix it with a pill or with a short, sharp shock, then that is an investment of personnel. And we all know that healthcare professionals, the people who are on the front line of this, the carers, the people, the psychiatric nurses, they are amongst the worst paid people in the industry rather than the best paid people. So therein lies the rub, as Shakespeare would write, Suzanne.
You're absolutely right. And Philippe Pinel had the one advantage of coming into revolutionary France and addressing government figures and saying, do you want to be leaving one population out of this wonderful thing you're doing with equality and caring and enlightenment views? We simply have to decide we want to commit those resources. And depression, I think, is one of the leading causes of lost work in the world right now, if not the leading one. It's certainly in the top five. So do we want to just do what we're doing, which isn't working, or do we want to look at how we can commit resources intelligently? Because one of the things I learned is that people in their first episode of a depression or a psychosis, if they're treated correctly, often won't relapse. But antidepressants for some people are terrific, but they have a very high failure rate compared to most drugs. So medicine has to be ready to try something else, because 15 to 20% of people respond to them well. Many people do not.
You talked about Dorothea Buck. Paul Schreiber, is it Schreiber or Schreiber?
It's Schreiber. Right. Yes.
Tell me a little bit about him, how he makes it into the Devil's Castle.
Paul Schreiber is actually where I began, and I learned about Action T4, the eugenics program, because I saw a little footnote that said the asylum that held him, Sonnenstein in Pirna, Germany, had had a gas chamber during the war. And I just thought, oh my Lord, what? And I actually, that was sort of pulling the first thread out of the yarn. So he actually was hospitalized in the late 1800s for life. He was, by our social standards to look at, flagrantly mad. And he litigated his own release. And his papers that he filed with the court were so powerful that not only did the judges come to call him admirable and say, this is, you know, what you're seeing, it belongs to the field of religion and not medicine, but it changed German law. Germany actually has different laws about consent because of Paul Schreiber. And his book and his legal documents were just, to me, almost, I call him the advocate for the mad. It was as if he was defending neurodiversity in a courtroom, and it's utterly fascinating.
And the thing is, as well, because I'm just thinking, the line between madness and genius is a constantly flowing one. And what society might think is mad behavior, somebody on an artistic thing, you know, something I could go, or you could go, come along with, could be, you know, we might think it's perfectly normal behavior. It's part of the artistic process, but perhaps a more conservative, a more hidebound, a more strictly conformist society, we went, well, they're just mad. And then you are on a really difficult step, because if what your society thinks is, if you've got a conservative society thinking, well, that's just mad behavior, then again, we are back to the Devil's Castle. We're back to 1930s, and you step out of line, and if you're bohemian, if you think in a different way, then you are a suitable case for treatment. And I use that word advisedly as well.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And I tracked down the stories of several people who were pilled in that program. Many were women who were either abused by their husbands, depressed, but because one woman was not just abused by her husband, but she'd had a series of miscarriages and was killed for, you know, biological depression. And another one was a woman artist who was quite brilliant, but she dressed in men's clothes and smoked cigars and just didn't conform. And we live right now, and I believe this is true in Europe as well, in a culture that has a fairly restricted sense of what's normal. You look back at the romantic poet William Blake, who would climb trees nude with his wife and play Adam and Eve, and you know, accept visitors like that. And they'd be okay, you know, they're being Adam and Eve today. Now, you know, when you read in the US, we love our advice columns. People will write into advice columns, oh, my husband's, you know, doing this, and get him an assessment. Get him, you know, right now what we would say about the poet William Blake is get him an assessment.
If not an interview.
Take him in, get him assessed, yeah. And you know where that's going to lead. No, it's not going to be lying in your tree naked, which I happen to think is lovely.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't write Jerusalem and Tiger, Tiger, Burning Bright in the Fires of the Night, I mean, what's the point? I mean, do you have to tread a very careful line? Because it would be easy to people to say, oh, well, Suzanne's got a thing here, but she's putting a link between Nazi Germany and modern America, and therefore she is talking as a liberal democratic, you know, the worst sort of example. And I am, you know, this is not coming from me, but you know what the kickback is, and it would be crass and crude just to say, okay, Nazi Germany 1930s, MAGA America, and I'm using my words really carefully, MAGA America now, health situation you've got there, RFK. Is it too knuckle dusting to say there are parallels? Are there fine lines that entwine? How do you approach this design in a way that you makes listeners or the reader think without going, oh, well, this is just an anti-Trump trope?
No, it's not an anti-Trump trope. And I didn't vote for Trump, but I think I'm far more nuanced about those things, certainly, than many people I know. But yes, there are certainly parallels. And the parallel is that we have gone back to something that happened right in Germany right before the war, or several decades leading up to the war, which is believing in the idea that brain distress is purely biological and needs to be addressed on a biological basis. There's no evidence for that. And as I said, the evidence even for genetics is, it's very mixed, but we're still in that place where we're saying this is something, it's not individual, it's not situational, this has nothing to do with the human soul, it's disease, and let's treat it that way. That, I think, has been a disaster. And we actually, in the US, went back to German ways of thinking around the late 1970s with a group of doctors who very openly based themselves on the German doctor Emil Kraepelin, who had he'd educated most of the worst of the Nazi doctors. So it's not like I'm saying something that's woke and fuzzy and nebulous. This is just factual. And Europe, unfortunately, while you don't use the manual we use, the DSM, most doctors here use it as part of their practice. They use it conceptually. So I think that's a huge problem. And I think the fact that there's been no evidence that neurotransmitters cause mental problems, that really can't, you know, the evidence for that has never really been there. We're still kind of in that track, and it's simply not working. I mean, so many people are so deeply unhappy that it's pretty clear to me that it's not working. So it is time to look at what we've inherited from that period and start rethinking it.
How difficult a book was this to write? Because this isn't a book that you put down and close a chapter or close, you know, pop the laptop down and then you go off and think, okay, now what's for dinner tonight? This stays with you, Suzanne, surely.
Thank you. I so appreciate that. It was difficult to write. First of all, I don't know German. Past tense, I did not know German. I learned it. I went to Germany. I found the people who were still living who knew Dorothea Buck and either interviewed them or corresponded with them. So it was very research intensive. I think I'm not a natural language learner, but I did learn German well enough to read it well and speak it decently. So, and just emotionally, I mean, I'm bipolar. I was looking at a program that would have taken me out and members of my family. So emotionally, it was difficult. And, you know, a lot of my own personal resources went into the writing of this book. You don't these days get advances on a book that would cover that amount of research. And I also got Dorothea Buck published and translated first in the United States. And that was really huge, but also quite a bit of work for me because I submitted it. I found the translator. I did all that work. So it was a lot, but it was so, to me, this is such an important, meaningful story for our time. It absolutely touches us now, not just in ways in which we might go wrong in blatant ways, but it touches now simply in how we're treating people who are distressed, which is overall not well and could be much better.
Is that what you're hoping that people will take? I mean, it is, and the listeners will know this, you know, I have an interest in the Reich in Germany, because I think it's a warning to us all how a educated and intelligent population can get it so horrendously wrong. I mean, is that the warning for us all? Is that something to take? And also the fact that we, you know, I mean, people go, oh, but we should be inclusive. If we to evolve as human beings, as an advanced society, then there is surely space and acceptance for all. Everybody on the spectrum. It shouldn't be, well, they are different and therefore they go somewhere else. And that somewhere else is where the horror happens.
Absolutely. We need to set up a culture in which people can function, and if they simply have different needs, and in which they can be helped if they have distress, but not in the way that we're doing. Because even when medication works here, we're not combining it with anything that addresses people's lives. And that historically is what has always worked. So I'm hoping that we find better ways of mind care. That's hugely important to me. And I'm hoping that, yes, we stop thinking of people as being in A basket or B basket, because we literally are not. Almost anybody, if somebody with psychiatric credentials talked to you at the worst moment of your life, could be diagnosed, could be hospitalized, could be given shock. And so many people that I spoke to or looked at historically were in very contingent circumstances, and yet their lives were turned upside down by those very brief, temporary contingent circumstances. So I think that's a lesson that we really need to take away. We're building on a system that was designed not to help people, which is the German system before the war, but simply to sort them into hope and no hope. And I had that in my own life. When my diagnosis was changed from schizophrenia to bipolar, people said, oh, now you have hope. I had hope before. It was just a word. It was meaningless. But it's so sad to me now when I look back on that we are essentially still doing, you know, the Harry Potter sorting hats. And it's so unhealthy because, as I said, all of us are in those boats at various times in our lives.
The book is called The Devil's Castle, Nazi Eugenics, Euthanasia, and How Psychiatric's Troubled History Reverberates Today. Listeners, you can order it via our own virtual bookstore. It's by Suzanne Paola Antonetta. Suzanne, if people want to find you online, I mean, do you have a website? I mean, I'm not saying either you TikTok, but
have a website. Yeah? Absolutely. It's www.suzantonetta.com, SUSANTONETTA. And I actually respond to most of the mail I get, unless it's trolly. So I love to hear from people. I love hearing people's stories. So yes, I am out there. It's horrendously out of date, that website, but I will attend that sooner or later.
It's a first point of contact, which is the main thing. The book is called The Devil's Castle. It's by Suzanne Paola Antonetta. Suzanne, it's been an absolute honor to speak to you today.
Same. Thank you so much for inviting me, and I hope you have a wonderful day.
This is Danielle Fischel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
When you have 5 and 7-year-old boys, I can promise you they love superheroes.
Oh, it never goes away. Indy is 11 years old and he's obsessed with comics, cartoons, video games, all of it.
Adler and Keaton both have Spider-Man costumes, and if anything says Marvel on it, they are in.
Same. Which is why we love Lingo Kids. They have Marvel Spider-Man activities that are totally age appropriate.
And safe. Made just for the little ones.
Plus, Disney's Moana, Frozen, Zootopia, all the characters your kids already love, and a few you're secretly hoping they'll get into.
I just load up the iPads with Lingo Kids before a trip, and with over 4,000 interactive activities, songs, and shows, it keeps their attention for hours.
Download Lingo Kids for free or go all in with Lingo Kids Plus for even more incredible content.
Choose the yearly plan and save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play.
Lingo Kids, everything kids love.